Hello and welcome to episode 108 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
I'm Derek.
And this is Tink.
This week, we're talking about iPhone CPU throttling, Japan's suicide forest, a cool new trivia game, and the Christian blogosphere. Without further ado, let's get started.
So there has been this story that has broken since we kind of took a break. Well, we didn't take break. We've been releasing episodes every week, but we haven't covered this story yet. So back, let me see, in like mid-December, Reddit users were finding that Apple was appearing to be slowing down old iPhones. And by mapping out performance, they figured, oh, it looks like they're doing this because of the batteries. The batteries aren't as good quality, so they're actually throttling the CPUs, making the phones slower, so as to reduce random shutdowns. And Apple did confirm that this is the case. Their press release said, "Our goal is to deliver the best experience for customers, which includes overall performance and prolonging the life of their devices. Lithium-ion batteries become less capable of supplying peak current demands when in cold conditions, have a low battery charge, or as they age over time, which can result in the device unexpectedly shutting down to protect its electronic components." So they released this, I think last year or the year before, they introduced this for iPhone 6, iPhone 6S, and iPhone SE models so that as the batteries got older and the batteries weaken, this keeps the user from experiencing slowdowns. However, they did not talk about this to anyone that I know of. Obviously, the reason they're doing this is not to urge people to upgrade to newer devices. This is to save the life of your phone. But they did a very bad job communicating on this topic. What are your guys' initial impressions on this? Should Apple have handled this better?
I think there's a term for this. Planned obsolescence?
No. But you strike a very excellent point in that, like, everyone who does not care will immediately think that this is planned obsolescence. So, like, Thanksgiving table, this would come up as like, "Oh, I heard Apple was actually trying to slow down your phone."
Good thing we've got a while till Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
buy those new shiny iPhone X's while you're out there.
So yeah, obviously there was a communication issue here. You can actually, Apple has they, after saying that yeah, this is the case, then Apple also later said that we are going to be dropping the price of battery replacements to $29 US, and the discount is worldwide, although obviously it'll be different number in your currency. But if you go into an Apple store, you say, "Hey, it seems my iPhone may be having battery issues." They'll go through their diagnostics, see if your batteries has an issue, and then you can replace it. So
price is down from what? 80, 100?
Like 89 or something, 79 maybe?
Okay.
So it's a significant drop.
Yeah, it is. Still probably a decent size markup though.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Apple products are marked up like 1,000% already.
Yeah. I'm actually curious. Like, I heard someone say today that they're probably actually taking a loss on this because it's such a dramatic drop. And it's like, I'm thinking they're probably still breaking even. I don't know though.
At least.
I mean, when you factor in costs and shipping and whatever. But yeah, and then I think later on in OS releases, they're going to release a feature that will communicate with you when your battery is actually having issues instead of just slowing down your phone and not telling you.
That's cool.
So
that would be better. But in the meantime, I prefer that my phone gets a little slower than that I all of a sudden have an issue where my battery just dies within a couple of hours each time I try and use it or something. Do you know what I mean? That situation is incredibly annoying because then it's like, I have to get my phone fixed today. And if you didn't bank on doing that today, then it's really annoying. But I guess it also depends on how much it's slowed down and how noticeable it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would say the same thing. I get random shutdowns with my phone because it's old and crap. But not having that would be awesome. But it's also understandably frustrating to people who would like totally pay the money to get their battery replaced, not knowing that it was a battery issue that their phones are slowing down for. So anyway, I think Apple has come back from this well, and I hope this teaches them some better communication from here on out on things like that.
So my topic is about Logan Paul, and he took a trip to Japan. And so I didn't know actually who Logan Paul was. I just happened to find this article and saw this, and I thought, like, what is this about? It's about Japan and about Pokemon Go, and I love Pokemon Go, so I'm gonna check this out. Apparently Logan Paul is a YouTuber, maybe pretty famous, and he took a trip to Japan recently. And in Japan, there's a place called Aokigahara. Man, yeah, I got it right. Aokigahara.
Works for me.
So this.
Can you translate that for us, one language speakers?
It's it's like a spring of blue trees.
Oh.
Or a sea of trees.
That sounds is delightful.
Name for
pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is like hundreds of thousands of people probably go there every year just to visit. And it's a beautiful place. It's right off of Mount Fuji. But it's also known as Japan's suicide forest because a while back ago, there was a novel written about two lovers who went to go commit suicide together there. And so it became a famous place for people to go commit suicide in. Japan actually has one of the highest, at least used to be the highest, but it's decreased. I can't remember if it's the highest. Anyway, highest suicide rate in the world. And so Japan, has lots of suicides. And this place used to have 100 people or so a year. Now it's down to 30, but it's still well known as a place for people to commit suicide. So they're going through this forest and they see a dead body. They catch it on camera. And in the final edit of the video, they actually kept the shot of the dead body in their video and put it on YouTube. And so apparently there's a very large outrage about this. None of my Facebook news feed knows about it since that's the only place I get news from.
it was like all over my Twitter feed and with just like people that I don't think of knowing YouTube. Like, I don't know Logan Paul. I watch some YouTube, but I'm not like a YouTube community person. But there were a lot of people, there was a lot of jokes cracked and derision against Logan Paul on this. So, yeah, people were generally unhappy with his decision here.
I heard about it on a podcast the day after it happened.
You know, his reason that he stated was to raise awareness about suicide using his video. And so just take that at face value, not dissect whether he was telling the truth or not, because I've seen his video, but it already had that removed. And so I haven't seen how he portrayed it. Just thinking about that, just a few weeks ago, maybe a month now, we talked about using VR for raising awareness for dementia. And so looking at this one, I thought it was another route taken to raise awareness for suicide, according to the creator. I just wanted to hear, first of all, what your opinions were on the route that he took. If you agree with most of the outrage or if you think that in some way there was some viability to what he did, whatnot.
I haven't seen the video, so I'm going to speak first, and then people who know more about it can say more than me, probably more accurately than me. But maybe that's a really bad idea. My initial thinking is just that this is probably not the right place for that kind of message. I don't really have any sort of anything to hugely underpin that. It just seems like it, from what I've heard, it was a video of a bunch of people having a lot of fun playing Pokemon Go and enjoying sort of just making memories and spending time with each other and whatever. So to kind of go from that and just on someone's YouTube channel, to cut from that to something so serious as like suicide prevention seems like kind of a mismatch to me. So I'm not saying he's not telling the truth. I don't know him and I haven't seen his sort of retraction or whatever, but it just feels like, why would you try and take this kind of video in that direction? Especially if you're not going to treat it in a way where people come away from it feeling like, wow, that was a really profound or a really sort of useful treatment of the topic of suicide prevention. If people are at all likely to walk away from it going, that was distasteful or that shouldn't have happened at all, or it was irrelevant to the video and we can't see any reason to put it in there other than gratuitous sort of violence and stuff like that, which seems like the reaction. People are annoyed that he would even show such a thing. Then I think it's probably just a little bit of a bad or quite a big bad decision to think that it's going to be sort of well received in this kind of video on this platform.
I will say just straight out, I think he's lying about his motivations. Because I've seen a commentary from people I trust in the YouTube realm about this. Like the first link in the description was to his merch. It wasn't to a suicide prevention something. Like the tone of the video was not about like raising suicide awareness. It was very playful. The headline in the article that we have in the show notes is he laughs it off, like this is not taking death seriously, and whoever that person was, like, it's not taking their struggles or anyone else who's struggling with suicidal thoughts seriously. It's terrible taste. I don't know Logan, I don't know his videos, but this just seems despicable.
On the face of it, it does seem like a knee-jerk reaction. Like, oh, people are annoyed. Let's say it's about suicide prevention. I must admit, reading the articles and stuff, that's how it came across to me. Was he was just kind of trying to cover the fact that it was a bad move in poor taste.
This seems maybe a little weird to say, but I am sitting here thinking that I'm a little encouraged, which maybe is a weird word, by the outrage, though.
Because I get you.
Two things. It means that, especially in an age where everything's become so trivialized and brief and the tyranny of the urgent and things like that, there still is this sort of collective shared understanding that you don't joke about some things and not everything is appropriate for every medium. And then secondly, that we still innately seem to understand that death is not the way things are supposed to be, that death is wrong, that it's a result of the broken world that we live in. And just to see people from all different, you know, backgrounds coming to that same conclusion is a little encouraging.
For sure. It also reminded me of, I think that's 100% true, Ben. I fully agree. It also reminded me of episode 46 with Tim Challies. I don't know if you guys remember, where he talked about seeing, like, we can at any time go on and see death online. But what we can see in terms of news media and stuff even today is real death. It's not just faked death in movies and stuff like that. It's progressed to, like, I know when Saddam Hussein was killed for his crimes and whatever, that was on YouTube at that stage. And there's this sort of, when this topic came up, I found myself remembering that and going, I don't want to go looking for the video, like the unedited version of the video, because there's actually just some things that shouldn't be joked about or shouldn't be trivialized, shouldn't be made into like a cultural spectacle, I guess, to try and sort of get more people to watch it or whatever. And so that it's just that sort of reminder of, there, like Ben was saying, there are some things that are more serious than can be dealt with on the internet in a positive and helpful way. Just keeping that in mind is probably a good thing as well.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I was thinking, as I've been thinking about this article, I was thinking, you know, that maybe is wrong. I mean, I agree that it wasn't the best route at all. But I think, you know, that God uses things for good. And at least in my life, this really has raised some thoughts about suicide. And just, it made me you know, as I was thinking a lot about it and a lot about, you know, in Japan and this happening, I realized, you know, like those who commit suicide in many ways are, you know, closer to understanding the gospel or than many people who don't, in the sense of what I'm getting at is, you know, suicide. I don't propose to think that I understand fully what people are going through when they commit suicide, but, you know, I see it as being overwhelmed by guilt or shame or meaningless, you know, and the gospel, that's the bad part. That's the bad news of the gospel, that we carry guilt, we carry shame. We've lost our meaning in the world. And so we try to be our own redeemers by killing ourselves, you know, but that's what Jesus did for us. He hung on a tree so that he could take care of our guilt and our shame and bring purpose back to our existence on the earth. And so, you know, in thinking about this video and thinking about Japan, which many people say like is such a hard place for the gospel to spread, that it's actually really good news to the people of Japan that if it has such a high suicide rate, then they do understand guilt. They do understand shame. They realize that there's something missing. And the people in our lives who, without us knowing it, are thinking about suicide, considering suicide, like to them, the gospel will truly be good news when they hear that Jesus took away that guilt that we're feeling or that shame that we're feeling. And so, yeah, I think, well, definitely the video, was the wrong way to go about it. Praise God for using some things for good, at least for me. So, and those were my thoughts after the video.
We're sponsored this week by Valley Vintage Shop. You can go to valleyvintageshop.com and get 10% off your order with our promo code TECH. Valley Vintage Shop is where you can get soaps, balms, and oils made the vintage way. Whenever you're in need of skin or hair care, Valley Vintage has you covered with all natural and handmade products. There are products for beard care for the fellows, hair serums and balms for the ladies, general room and body sprays, lip balm, and way more. And I don't know if you've ever gotten handmade soap before, but boy, is it a treat. It smells good, it feels good, and it, frankly, it looks cool too. It's always a treat to get some handmade soap for yourself. And all of their merchandise is packaged in recyclable material, so you are taking care of your environment as you take care of yourself. To get some to try for yourself, go to valleyvintageshop.com and use our code TECH for 10% off your order. Thanks to Valley Vintage for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation.
I want to talk about a new iPhone app, which just came out on Android, called HQ Trivia. And let me just start with a poll. Have you guys heard of HQ Trivia?
No.
Yes, from you.
Yes, I have heard about it externally from you.
Okay, great. Those are all of the three possible answers, I suppose. Well, let me just really quickly tell you what it is for anyone who doesn't know. Very, very popular new-ish, I think it's a couple months old, game that came out on iOS and is now on Android as of a few days ago. It is a live video trivia game that you can play with hundreds of thousands, up to a million other people right now. Earlier today, I was playing it and there were 700,000 people on it. It airs two times a day and it's live, so it's only those two times a day. You can't just open it and play it. It's at two, and these are central times because that's where I live, 2 p.m. Central and 8 p.m. Central every day. Some days they do different things. Like on New Year's Eve, they did one at like 10:25 because of the new year, again, Central. But generally, it's 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. And there's a cash prize. You split this cash prize with everyone who wins the trivia. It takes about 10 minutes. That's it. Really 10 minutes to get through the whole thing because it's 12 questions. They are multiple choice questions. There are three answers. The first two of the 12 questions are usually very, very easy, although some people still miss those. Like I missed one the other day that was, which of these movies has to do with baseball? And one of the answers, it was like Caddyshack, something else, and Mr. Baseball. And I was like, surely, I had no idea. Surely it's not Mr. Baseball. Like, but it was Mr. Baseball. So, that was question two and I was out. I hadn't seen that movie. I don't know. It's fine. Judge me if you want. Anywho. So yeah, it's HQ trivia, live trivia 2 times a day. And the cash prize, which again is split between the winners, everyone who gets through all 12 questions, which generally is between like 5 and 15 people, usually starts out with about 600,000 or so. I've played up to 1 million. And then you're usually left with like 12 people left generally at the end. And it varies, of course. And you split $2,000 between however many people win. And if someone does not win, if no one wins, then that prize rolls over to the next time. So the prize doubles to $4,000 and so on. It has gotten up to $25,000 in one game, if I recall correctly. And it's not uncommon to have 4,000s and 10,000s and so on and so forth. When it started, it was, you know, $25, $100, $200. Now it's regularly 2,000 every time it shows up. So that's HQ Trivia. It is free to play. I have no idea how they're making money, but it is free to play. You do not have to do anything except answer the questions right to get real, actual money. I've never won. The questions are very, very difficult as you, it's almost like, it's not exactly like a curve. It's more like a wall or a step or something. Anywho, so there is one particularly dark take that is very well written and thought-provoking from The Atlantic, which I've linked in the show notes, which you're welcome to check out if you like. I don't generally agree with it. I think that that person's taking it way too seriously. Perhaps if you have an addictive personality, you should ignore everything I'm saying right now and not download this game. But for me, I just think it's fun. I like trivia and maybe I'll win some money. I never expect to because they're really hard questions. But it's just a fun, like, social thing. And I generally am playing in a group of people like me and my wife or me and some friends. And, it's just a fun little social activity. And, if you want to sign up for free, you can do so and use my referral code so I can get some extra lives.
I just did.
Nice.
Yes, I just did as well.
What do you guys think about this game? Derek, you've played it.
I have not played it. I've heard about it.
Oh, okay.
So I have not actually played it, but... How do you know.
How do you get paid by it?
How do you what, Craig?
How do you get paid by it? Like, if you win cash prize, how do you... Does that, like, PayPal across to you or something?
That's a good question. And the answer that I will give you is, I don't know... Because I've never won the money.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Here you go. FAQs. Is that real money? Yep. It's sent straight to your PayPal when you win over $20 in prizes.
All right.
You also don't have to stick around when you lose.
So once you missed a question, you can just bump out.
Yeah, you can just drop. I usually watch the next question to see if I would have missed that one anyway, and then I generally feel a little bit better about myself. when I get that one, I'm like, ah, dang, that really sucks. But
did you say what the furthest you've got is so far?
I didn't say. I want to say I've gotten to like question 8, maybe. It's probably somewhere between 6 and 8 is the farthest I've gotten. I've got a buddy who got to 11. Anywho, HQ Trivia. It's pretty fun. Don't take your lives too seriously or your games. And have some fun and maybe win some money, but you probably won't. But if you do, congrats.
Nice.
This week I came across an article on firstthings.com. I don't really know what that is. I think it's the Institute on Religion and something or other else it says in the title. Public life. And it was basically talking about the 8 kinds of commenters in the Christian blogosphere, which caught my attention because I have a quote-unquote Christian blog. And there's lots of other people who do. Mine is small and hardly anyone reads it, but I also follow a whole bunch of the more popular ones, Desiring God and Challies and things like that. And these kind of... I started reading through them going, 8's a lot. Like, I guess you could say there's a huge number, or there might only be 2 or 3 that are sort of, you know, can also be known as other things. But these actually seem to be pretty accurate. So just quickly wanted to run through what they were. and then maybe we can have a quick chat. But it's basically there's one of them in particular that I think that I want to focus on. The first one is Heresy Hunters, which is, despite the fact that there's a long post, there's one particular line that bugs me. I think it's a gross error, theological error. Therefore, it invalidates everything you've said. And so, I must respond to keep your readers from falling into this same theological trap. So, that's Heresy Hunters.
Quotation it's a good thing God's got you on his team.
Quotation hounds say, I love this line. It's the money quotation of the post. I plan to use it on Sunday. Disciples say, I so appreciate your theological perspective. In fact, your words always seem inspired, and therefore I cannot disagree with what you write ever. I will share everything I read as a matter of course, because I want to spread the word. So, ecclesial evangelists is the next one. Everything you said just affirms my own faith tradition, and even though you don't belong to it, all of those problems or issues you raise have been dealt with in my faith tradition, and that's why we're right. If only everyone, including you, would become one of us, the Christian world would be fine.
I'm running through my head of all the times that I've seen all of these.
I know. It's actually true. I started reading this thinking these won't all be accurate, and then I was like, yeah, they're all true. The next one's called Theopolitikos. I come to this blog to find ammo for my moral and political views, and your efforts to offer an alternative perspective are not helpful. I don't care if we do share the same faith tradition. Please stick to the party line of this site. If you cannot, go far, far away. The next one is Discoverers of Deeper Hidden Meaning. I've read your post quite carefully, and while I know you have not said this explicitly anywhere, I'm sure the deeper meaning is an affront to the theological or ecclesiastical tradition I respect. I represent. You're not simply trying to describe what's going on in the Christian world. You're really trying to invalidate that part of the world to which I belong, and I need to clarify that for your readers. Last two, Pracy People. I've read the first paragraph, and despite the fact that most opening paragraphs are introductions that set the tone, I think yours is a Pracy of everything you say in the post, and therefore I can ignore or skim the rest. And then the last one is Literalists. I cannot affirm what you say because the way you've said it could be misinterpreted as not in agreement with our faith tradition. I'm not really sure that it is. I wish you would simply repeat verbatim the official lines of what we teach somewhere so I could know with certainty that we're in agreement.
Wow.
So, before we go any further, what are your thoughts other than Derek thinks that they're all pretty accurate?
Well, a Pracy, which I looked up, is the correct pronunciation of that word, and it means a summary or abstract of a text or speech.
Yeah.
All right.
I've had to write them before. That's how I know how to pronounce them.
Oh, you're so smart. I just
went to university and had to write them. Yeah, anyway, so they are pretty accurate. There's two sort of things that I want to talk about from this article, and I'll try and be as brief as I can. The first is that I was listening to... who was it? I think I was listening to Calvinist Batman maybe recently. I think it was his discipleship episode where he had one of the guys from G3 conference on, like one of the guys who organizes it. It might have been that. Anyway, they were talking about sort of some of the dangers of New Calvinism and saying that in general, the New Calvinist movement is a valid movement and it's got really good things going for it. But there are some things within it that... need some work. We need to be self-reflective as members of that movement, I guess, and try and work out where we are maybe missing the mark. And I think one of those things that I come across relatively frequently is probably a tendency to focus on two of these, one of which would be Heresy Hunters, which is people just going, looking for things that they disagree with and then blowing them out of proportion and making that person a heretic, which I think we've talked about before. And the other one is, I think, literalists, where and people are guilty of all of them, obviously. Even us, at times, I'm a pricey person. Sometimes if I don't have time to read the whole article. But literalists, where, you know, something that someone says could mean something bad, and therefore it necessarily does mean something bad, and therefore that person is bad. Like, that kind of sort of... incorrect extrapolation from what was actually not necessarily an incorrect turn of phrase or something. And I feel like there's a tendency, maybe it's our sort of, I don't know, wanting to be right all the time. Maybe it's a reformed thing if we need to keep reforming everyone and everything around us. But I feel like there is a little bit of a sort of a tendency to just look for the error and then focus on the error and then expand the error out and make it a bigger problem than it actually is. Sometimes there's not even an error there. Does that make sense? Would you guys agree?
Yeah, and it's easy. It's pretty easy to do that. Well, and it's not necessarily easy to do that. I mean, once you get used to it, it's easy to do that. But it's a very compelling argument to find something that's negative about a thing in order to discredit it. So I've definitely done that before. I try to avoid it. But I'm sure that I have embodied any one of these descriptors here in the course of this podcast in given a certain topic. So this seems like a good reminder for myself as well.
Real-time follow-up. The episode of the podcast you were referring to, it was Calvinist Batman and Friends. It was the most recent episode at the time of our recording, and it was with Josh Bice, who is one of the organizers of the G3 conference. It was very good. We can maybe link it in the show notes. You know, Craig, there's one other, maybe a ninth type of commenter in the Christian blogosphere.
Mm-hmm.
This was not represented in the list. Do you want to know what it was?
Yes.
It is the non-commenter. The one who agrees with James White that comment boxes are internet ignorance aggregators and never reads the comments because they are the worst part of the internet. The number one rule of the internet is do not read the comments. And therefore, I respect the internet enough to follow that rule and thus never comment myself.
Yeah. But do you read the comments anyway?
No.
If it's a provocative article, do you read the comments?
No. Comments just make me really, really, really sad for the state of human beings.
Yeah. Like sometimes I'll look at tweet responses, but generally comments are a terrible part of the internet.
Yeah. All right. So this wasn't the next part of what I want to say wasn't directly related to comments on a website, blog posts, like response comments. But John Piper did put up an article in September of last year, now 2017. So it was around the time, you know, leading into the Reformation 500 celebrations, and it was entitled, Does God Really Save Us by Faith Alone? And he talks about the fact that we use these five solas, which are sort of helpful taglines or catchphrases to identify some of the key teachings of the Reformation. But then he sort of warns against not using them accurately or sort of assuming they mean certain things and not actually knowing what they mean, I guess.
Maybe like reductionism?
That's kind of how I think that's... Yeah, basically. So, assuming that kind of sums up the Reformation in its entirety. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, as at its core, you can link the key tenets of the Reformation to those things. But he then goes to expand on faith alone, so sola fide. And he talks about it from the perspective of... I think he's pushing back against the idea that as long as we have faith in Christ, we can do anything with our lives. It doesn't really matter because we believe in Jesus and therefore our salvation is secure and therefore that's the end of the story. Now, that is true from a justification standpoint. We are justified by faith alone and our salvation depends on our justification. Anyone can correct my theology if I'm saying something wrong here, but this is how I understand what Piper's saying. And I've also have the benefit, I think, of being more than knee deep in his response to N.T. Wright on justification, which is a whole book about justification. But then he then points out that James in James 2, which always comes up, obviously, with the people who want to say that works-based salvation is a thing. James says that faith without works is dead, and he says, I'll show you my faith by my works, and things like that. So, Piper is, I think, just saying that he uses this phrase final salvation or ultimately saved, how we ultimately saved, which I think is where the lack of clarity comes from. And some people are picking up on this kind of thing and saying that this is heresy. And so the heresy hunters, I've actually come into contact with a few heresy hunters who are picking up on that and taking it sort of out of context from everything else he's written, and basically saying that he affirms a works and faith combination. But I think really what he's saying is that saving faith is different to dead faith in that, you know, real true faith will have works following it, which are fruits of the Spirit. They are actually works of God in our lives, not our own works anyway, so we can't take credit for them. But they are evidence of the fact that the faith that we have is true faith and not dead faith. And I think that's really all Piper's saying. He's just pointing out that, hey, yes, faith alone is really important, but faith alone isn't this mere sort of conceptual belief that is kind of like ticking a theological box so that we can get our get to heaven card. It is actually something that then leads to a change in our life, which then confirms the faith that we have, which at Final Judgment Day is kind of, you know, Jesus will look at our lives and say, yes, this is real faith, not dead faith, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a nuanced treatment of the topic, and the internet does not always like nuance.
Give me one example of the internet ever liking nuance.
I was being gracious, Ben. It's being great. Okay, we're talking good to the internet right now. We don't want to get, you know, the internet all in a tizzy.
No, no. Our listeners are not. I do not think that they qualify for the moniker the internet.
No, they really don't. I always really appreciate the conversations in the Slack that we have, yes, with our listeners, because even if
there's
a misunderstanding,
truthful people,
yeah, even if there's a misunderstanding, usually it's taken care of in an honoring, genteel way. So yeah, I appreciate that.
On the Piper article, I just am frustrated by the controversy. It's not controversial. The man has been teaching this for years. It's not new. This is a republication of stuff that he's previously taught for, I don't know, maybe decades. It is the classic historic reformed perspective that good works confirm our justification. Saving faith produces good works. Just like Craig said, just like Piper's saying, it's not controversial. It's what the Bible teaches. I don't know how that has anything to do with denying sola fide. It's. I wonder if maybe the old Calvin quote, it's by faith alone, but not by faith that is alone, is maybe misleading some people. Maybe it'd be better for us to speak about the kind or quality of faith. So like exactly what James is doing in James 2, he's talking about types of faith, dead faith and saving faith as contrast to each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that would be more clear. I don't know. But I don't generally think that it's controversial, really.
I think the only problem, I think a lot of the problem that would have been solved with this article is if the title was not so
provocative.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah,
it's
one
a
time
clickbait
they published an article on Desiring God that was titled "The Kingdom of God is Not Good News," and I sent it to. It was just a Piper clip, and I sent it to a friend of mine who, we have talked about the gospel of the kingdom type stuff a lot, and he said, this feels like clickbait.
Yeah. They know how to get people reading their stuff, I guess. That's the thing. And so maybe it is clickbait, but as we would all probably affirm, it's where stuff that comes from Desiring God, you can generally be pretty confident is not outright heresy, or is in fact not even edging towards outright heresy. But yeah, the titles sometimes leave a bit to be desired. Anyway, we can leave it there. Just thought it was interesting. And maybe keep those 8 kinds of commenters in mind next time you are about to hit the comment button. If that's you, if you're a silent non-commenter, then so be it.
If you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our community on Slack. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com. It's free like HQ Trivia, but you can't win $2,000. Sorry.
You can also find us on Twitter at TechReformation.
And you can check out our past shows on our website at techreformation.com.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back.